Chapter 40. Murder. Jen couldn't help but think that the skirmish with the Uyumark had somehow been the catalyst that changed the prospects of the caravan from good to ill. In the days that followed their discovery of the Uyumark company, fierce winds howled from the north, kicking up dust and dirt that bit when they hit exposed flesh. Soldiers and drivers had difficulty controlling the horses, and they could only see for short distances in front of them. For once, Jen mused, the Shalane could feel grateful for her carriage. While dust still came in through the bars, she was not exposed to the full fury of the wind. The mages, including Aethrys, rode patrols around the camp, using their magic to ease the effect of the gale and to help the caravan lumber forward. The winds would usually die down when the sun fell, something for which all were thankful, but Uyumark bands began making raids in the night, launching arrows into the camp from their hiding places in the dark. Two soldiers had been killed, a few others injured, though many more Uyumark found death for their boldness. Regent Ogbith sent skirmishers forward night and day to clear the way and bring advance warning of any attack. The terrain, hilly and dotted with trees and rocks, provided many shadows for ambush and assassins. Any sound out of the ordinary turned heads and moved hands to weapons, but as yet the Uyumark had attempted no open confrontation. Even so, the creature's rhythmic and distant pattering in the night foreshadowed conflicts yet to come. On the fourth day since Jen and Maywen's excursion, the quick-moving wind brought clouds with it, along with a light rain. The change from blistering heat and stinging wind was welcome, but as morning changed to afternoon, the rain picked up and the wind intensified again. It was in that wind that the long-missing deep-range scouts were found, swaying from the branch of a dead pine, mangled so horribly that Jen felt sick despite the hundreds of brutal visions he'd seen during his training. Regent Ogbith ordered them cut down and given a proper burial. Their enemies had clearly left the corpses to unnerve the caravan, and thankfully the bodies were hidden from view well before the Shalane's carriage passed. Night fell, and still it rained. The Shalane spoke with Jen for nearly 2 hours, whispering her concerns in the dark, seeking strength as fear settled in the camp. To distract her from her troubles, he got her talking about Fenner and Jeff and her mother, throwing in a few jokes about Shatan. By the time his watch was over, Jen was thoroughly drenched, his toes squishing in water pooled around the socks in his boots. "I've scared up a dry blanket for you, Jen," Jaren said as he climbed atop the wagon. "I would appreciate it if you would return the favour this evening." "Thank you, Jaren," Jen returned. A dry blanket and his Trismagic books sounded very inviting, and he jogged away toward his wagon. Maywen waited for him a little ahead of the wagon, backpack resting on her foot to keep it out of the mud. She wore no hood or hat against the rain and seemed heedless of the weather. Even with her black hair matted against her head and face, Jen thought she still carried an air of nobility that court-bred women with their carefully crafted hair and meticulously painted faces could not match. "How is the watch, Jen?" she asked, always in Elvish. He hoped Fenner was nowhere nearby, since she scowled at him every time she saw Maywen talking with him. "Long and wet, though uneventful. And the Shalane? She is understandably a little scared, but clinging to hope. She spends most of her time giving me advice on how to navigate the troubled waters stirred up by Morel and Fenner." Maywen smirked. "I've lived a long time, but cannot offer any aid there. You have done your duty and earned your respect by it. You haven't lost my respect for what we did." "I would hope not, since it was your idea. But I doubt you're loitering around here waiting to tell me about your respect." Maywen's face sobered. "No, I thought you should know that I had a talk with Aethrys. He tells me what I had already suspected. The weather is the work of magic. The Uyumark are trying to slow our journey and interfere with our ability to look around us. Aethrys feels that the magic is too powerful to be the work of just the one Uyumark shaman we saw, so we are likely facing more than one Uyumark company, or a very strong magician." "I prefer the rain over the threat of arrows in the dark," Jen said. "They are toying with us. I fear they have a large force to set against us, and I have an idea of where they will loose it upon us. The farther we get into rough territory, the less our strength of numbers or provisions will help us. If you feel like defying everyone, convince Jaron to come with us, and we will take the Shalane to Eldoduri Mora quickly." Jen knew Maywin was serious, but she didn't have to report to anyone when it was over. Jen wasn't sure Maywin's plan would work anymore anyway. The Uyumak appeared to have intelligent leaders, and if there were significant numbers of them in the wilderness, they would be deployed to keep anything from slipping by them unnoticed. Strength and speed coupled together were what they needed to survive the Uyumak, and the weather ensured that speed could not be had. The question Jen had heard on the lips of leader and soldier alike was what had happened to the large force sent to clear the way for them. They were to guard a store of provisions at Dunnock Falls, and 2 days would see the caravan there, unless the carriages and wagons became so mired as to prevent any progress. So far the ground had held firm, but if the rain continued it would only be a matter of time before the earth was oversaturated and the wagons would sink. "I'm afraid we're stuck with the caravan for good or ill," Jen replied. "Besides, we would have to take the Blessed One with us if we absconded with a Shalane, and I don't think I could stand being in close quarters with that man. Of course, if we left and he were killed, we could return home. Then the world would be doomed. He has many faults, but we cannot do without him." Jen nodded, but thought privately that they were all doomed, especially with Shertan at the head of the human nations, unless the war were to be won by philandering and inebriation. Jen said, "I'd best get some rest. I think I'll need every last wit I have in the coming days." "I see they've granted you permission to scout ahead." Maywin smirked. "I don't need their permission or their blessing, though I let them think I do as a courtesy. Sometimes. I want to see if I can find any sign of the soldiers who were to meet us at Dunnock Falls for reprovisioning. They refuse to send any more scouts forward, as they tend not to return any more. But I think I can manage. I do wish you could come, though. I could use that sword of yours. If you find the rest of that Uyumak company, don't attack them without me. They've caused me quite a bit of trouble, and I should like to exact the price from them." Maywin grinned and shouldered her backpack. "When this is over, you shall travel with me. I could show you places that would cure you of any longing for cities or human company." Jen was stunned by the offer. "No doubt you could, but I imagine I will spend the rest of my days in the service of the Shalane." "I don't think you shall be in the service of the Shalane for much longer at all." "Why?" Jen asked, surprised. "Once the Shalane marries Shertan, she will be a member of his house, and he will be the king of all the race of men, including you. Considering the way he feels about you and Rugothians in general, he will place her under the protection of his guards, and have the Dark Guard dismissed. If I read him right, he will have you killed the first chance he gets. If he is wise, which he isn't, he will at least wait till you help get him home. If I were you, I would enter no stronghold of his. You've made him look the buffoon twice, which is twice more than anyone alive has done. If you step one foot into Ogmir, I will be at your funeral within a week." She paused, letting it sink in. "Of course, he'll order Fenner to stay with the Shalane and order you to stay away first. He knows you have feelings for Fenner, and will do whatever he can to make you miserable." Jen felt numb. He thought his appointment to the Shalane's guard would never end, at least as long as Mikik still threatened her. The realization that what he thought would last the better part of his lifetime would be over in a few weeks made him instantly feel as gloomy as the weather. "I'm sorry to be the one to tell you," Maywin said upon noticing his distress. "I thought you would already know, though you might have thought the Shalane would have some sway with Shertan on the matter. When it is time, Jen, I will come for you, and you should come with me. Soon I think the only service you will be able to offer the Shalane or Fenner will be to stay alive and not grieve them. Shertan will want your blood, and I know every good place to hide. Think about it, but tell no one." Jen nodded his response as Maywin squeezed his arm and sprinted away into the rain-drenched hills. Jen exhaled heavily and went to the rear of the wagon. Fenner sat inside, arms around her knees and eyes burning with anger. Unexpectedly, Jeff was nowhere to be found. "Did you have a nice little talk with Maywin?" she asked, voice cold. Jen clambered up into the wagon. He didn't feel like talking at all. "No, She had nothing good to say. The bitterness in his voice was more than he had intended to show. The effect on Fenner was remarkable. Her face immediately changed from anger to concern. "Jen, what's wrong?" Fenner asked as he removed his sword. "For one, there are likely more Uyumark arrayed against us than we previously thought, and they have magicians. This storm is their work." Jen pulled his shirt off and began to wring it out over the edge of the wagon.
"We always knew that was a possibility, Jen. Something else is bothering you. The look on your face when you came around the corner of the wagon was darker than any I've ever seen you wear, though you rarely have an expression at all."
Jen pulled off his boots and socks and lay back on the bedding. Fenner shifted to look at him. "If you must know," Jen explained, calming his voice, "Maywin is of the opinion, and unfortunately I agree with her, that once the Shalane is married to Shertan, elevating him to be the lord and ruler of us all, he will have the power to dismiss me from the Shalane's service, if not kill me outright." Fenner's face saddened.
"If he had any respect for the Shalane, he wouldn't. We both know how much respect he has for the Shalane. He will probably dismiss me as well. That is the other thing. Maywin seems to think he will send me away, but order you to stay and serve the Shalane because he knows I love you, and will keep you from me to hurt me."
"And do you?"
"Do I what?"
"Love me."
Jen regarded her closely and steeled himself. He knew what he had to do, even if it was unfair to Fenner.
"I do," he said softly. "If I didn't, I would have run off with that little half-elven hussy a long time ago."
Fenner grinned warmly and punched him in the ribs, before laying her head on his shoulder and remaining quiet for many minutes.
"I suppose," she finally said, "that I should act like I hate you from now on, so that he won't think to use me against you."
"On the contrary, you should act like you love me more than ever, as if you can't stand to be without me."
"One might think that a self-serving answer,"
Fenner grinned, coming up on an elbow,
"though that wouldn't require an act on my part.
But you are serious, aren't you?
Why?"
Jen held her eyes with his.
"Listen, Fenner. When the Shalane marries Shertan, she will be utterly alone, kept from everyone she knows or cares about. If there's anything we can do to trick Shertan into letting you stay with her, then we should do it. It would be hard on you, too, I'm afraid. You will end up in Ogmir miles from home, and I'll be running for my life, and won't be able to do so much as write. We can only hope that when Eldaloth returns to the world, he will put things right, both with Mikkik and Shertan, and we can become Lord and Lady Blackshear."
Fenner lay her head back on Jen's breast. They listened to the rain patter against the canvas covering above them, and the voices of soldiers preparing their gear for the next leg of the journey.
"You are right," Fenner finally agreed, voice resigned. "I couldn't bear to see her alone like that. I will help her, even if it means I can't be with you for a while. But how do we get Shertan to do it?"
"First, the Shalane must know nothing. She is stubborn and self-sacrificing and would do her best to scuttle our plan. As for the rest, I'll be as annoying as possible to Shertan, which I can do without trying, and we should also announce our intention to marry and try to be seen as much as possible together. Of course, to make it convincing, I'll have to kiss you from time to time, which I haven't got much practice doing."
"I think we can work on that."
By the time Fenner left to spend time with the Shalane, Jen felt confused and sick, despite Fenner's sincere affection. None of the scenarios for rule under Shertan ended pleasantly for him, and if he wasn't careful, things wouldn't end well for Fenner or anyone that cared for him either. How Shertan would react to the wedding announcement was not guaranteed to play out as Jen foresaw it, and everything Shadan Cairn had taught about enemies exploiting those he held dear to him were slowly and awfully coming true. Jen shoved the worrisome thoughts away. Fretting would only weaken him. To distract himself, he removed the Triss magic book from his travel chest and began to read. As it was written in a language only he, Maywin, and Ethris understood, he wasn't worried someone might discover it. If someone did find out it was a book about Triss magic, however, it would invite a lot of questions he didn't want to answer. Since he had begun studying some months ago, he had learned that Triss magic greatly differed from Min magic and Duam magic, and that it was staggeringly flexible and powerful.
Whereas magicians of Min magic and Dua magic had to memorize specific, discrete incantations and gestures to perform their magic, Triss magicians did not. Triss magic had no set spells and was limited only by the imagination and power of the magician. This flexibility came with a price. Triss magic required a stronger will to perform, and tended to exhaust the caster more quickly than the others, and from what Jen had seen, Min and Duam magic quickly drained the power of even puissant magicians. To counter this weakness in Triss magic, the book he was reading taught that a Triss magician must use wit to accomplish tasks with minimal effort. Jen read, "Take, for example, the case of bringing down a mounted rider. It is often the mistake of the apprentice to want to be ostentatious. Therefore they expend great effort and time to turn the entire animal into stone, exhausting themselves unnecessarily and leaving them ill-prepared to deal with any other danger that may arise by and by. Furthermore, anyone who witnessed the event would be immediately alerted that a magician was nearby. While the result may be spectacular and impressive, approaching the problem differently yields a better overall result. A magician in this scenario would be wise to think, what is the least I need to do to unhorse the rider? There are several answers, of course, depending on how much injury you wish to inflict upon the rider, but instead of turning the horse to stone, why not simply weaken the material of the saddle buckle so severely that it breaks? The rider would fall, little effort would have been expended, and the victim would not think a magician the culprit, but rather a poor craftsman." The most important thing Jen had read, and what Aethrys told him to understand, even if it meant suffering ignorance on every other topic, was protection from Triss magic's transmuting power. Triss magicians could take an object, including a living thing, and with a subtle spell protect it from transmutation. The protection was as strong as the will of the magician, and only a stronger will could break it down. Jen knew that his first task upon the unveiling of Triss would be to protect those he loved against any pettiness that Shatan planned to inflict upon them. Since Triss would be unveiled slowly, its power would grow slowly for Jen and Shatan. Jen wasn't sure how many people he could protect at first, but the Shalane and Fenner were obvious choices for his immediate consideration. Merel and Aethrys would follow as quickly as he could. The more Jen read, the more he realized how complicated protection could become. While persons could be protected against having their flesh transmuted to stone, the protection could not keep a Triss magician from transmuting the air above them into a huge slab of iron, or the ground at their feet into a gaping pit. Jen read how most magicians would create and maintain a globe of protection around themselves when they thought danger was near. It took stamina to keep such a protection active, and only extraordinary Triss magicians had power enough to create items that would do the work for them. Creating magical items was second in difficulty only to creating life, both feats involving imbuing something with a self-maintaining force. Few Triss magicians had ever mastered the former, and even fewer the latter. But somewhere within those pages lay the secret of Jen's creation, the answer to what Joran had showed him. There were two types of creations Triss magicians could fashion: animations that had no spirit or essence, and vivifications, whole beings with spirit. Jen wondered what Mikik had done with the seed Joran had planted in the Goreth forest. Jen studied protections for a while longer and then put the book away. He knew Shatan had likely read translations of the same books he had, and probably more. Thinking of what Shatan would be able to do to any of them in a few short weeks sent a chill up Jen's spine. Triss magic in the hands of a spoiled, self-indulgent brat could only lead to misery for anyone connected to him, and Jen doubted the Blessed One would ever have a will strong enough to impel Mikik to do more than laugh at him. Mikik was a god, and Jen didn't see how any mortal magician could ever have sufficient strength to overpower him. Even Eldaloth, Mikik's master, had not been able to defend himself from Mikik's power. Perhaps Eldaloth's return would come swiftly enough to render Shatan's weakness irrelevant. Pushing aside his doubts and concerns, Jen found peace enough to sleep. The camp was quiet, save for the steady patter of rain and the occasional splash of a sentry's boot. Jen wrung out the hood of his cloak again, wondering why he bothered. The rain hadn't so much as favored them with a minute's respite,
and the pure men found themselves in the service of those catching sick due to constant exposure to the dampness. The overcast sky plunged the camp into pitch darkness when night fell, and no one dared light a lantern for fear of archers in the dark. Jeff had stopped by early in Jen's watch to congratulate him on winning the Lady Fenner. While the flashy bard tried to appear nonchalant, Jen knew better. The slight strain in the voice and eyes as he talked about it revealed his feelings on the matter. Jen fought against an urge to hurt the bard by rubbing it in, choosing instead to offer a simple thanks. Mirel had also stopped by briefly, but left upon finding her daughter asleep. Jen wasn't sure if she had forgiven him for his little outing, as she and Fenner now called it, and the first mother's face bore more worry upon it than usual. She and Ethris engaged in many conversations with each other that evening, and whatever they talked about discomforted them both. Jen had to admit to a nagging worry festering within him as well. The enemy, far from being disorganized and incompetent, as they had previously thought, was instead calculating and prepared. The Uyumark and their masters had laid a plan, and there seemed little they could do to disrupt it without exposing themselves to even greater danger. Jen, the Shalane's voice startled him as she had been asleep since before he came on watch. Alumira, what brings you awake this time of night? Are you well?
I slept most of the day. The clouds make it even darker in here than usual, and the sound of the rain lulls me to sleep. I have never really been outside in a rainstorm like this before. It makes the little rain we received at Shroud Lake a drop in a pond.
Most storms aren't this bad, or this long.
Fenner told me what you'd learned about the rain, and while I mention Fenner, I must congratulate you. You certainly turned that situation around in a hurry.
Jen couldn't tell if she was genuinely surprised or probing because she suspected something.
I was almost a bard, he returned. I do have some skills with a fairer sex, whether you believe it or not. You must be powerful in your arts indeed. Just yesterday I don't think she would have given you an affectionate kick in the shin, much less accept the idea of marrying you without some serious, prolonged grovelling and repentance on your part. Then she shows up this morning with nothing but good things to say about you, and face glowing with anticipation over your upcoming nuptials. I simply must know how you affected this reversal.
Jen knew she was suspicious now.
Well, if you must know, I think she changed her feelings when she saw me take my shirt off after my watch. I may have the personality of a dog carcass and the charm of a bloated tick, but you will have to admit that I do look good with my shirt off. As far as I can tell, my muscular chest dismantled all her remaining concerns.
The Shalane laughed, an alien sound in the benighted camp.
Oh, do go on. Was she speechless? Did she just melt into your arms? Surely Fenner is intelligent and stalwart enough not to fall for such base charms.
You know Fenner well. I thought I was going to lose her for a moment, but then I started flexing my chest muscles one at a time, first the right, then the left. No woman can resist that, especially when combined with a few well-crafted expressions of undying devotion.
I see, the Shalane smirked. So a muscular display and a few sweet whispers in the ear, and Fenner toppled. I had thought she would hold the fort longer. I shall have to revise my high opinion of her willpower.
Do not be so quick to judge. Don't think that just because you're the Shalane that you're the only one that has irresistible charms.
She chuckled. I see. I must have missed that part of the prophecy. The Blessed One, the Shalane, the Ilk, and the soldier with the irresistible chest. So your role in our epic history is what? To make all women dissatisfied with any other man?
Sadly, yes.
To what end?
To make all men angry with me, I think.
Really?
The Shalane's mirth subsided and she dropped her voice to a whisper.
Then you are fulfilling your role well. By all reports, both Kimdan and Jeff were in high dudgeon all day. Jeff, I can understand, but Kimdan's displeasure angers me. Fenner was giddy about him for years, and he wouldn't so much as be polite to her. He only became interested in her when he realized she was taken with you. Losing Fenner serves him right.
I don't much care what either one of them thinks.
I didn't think you would. I do want to congratulate you. Fenner is a wonderful woman, and I'm happy she found someone like you. She has grown since she began her association with you. I can't help but feel a little envious of her. Of course, my heart belongs to Shatan.
Don't say that, Jen protested with sudden heat. Not even in jest. That your person belongs to Shertan is bad enough. Let your heart rest on something or someone else.
The Shalane was silent for a long time. Jen started to apologize when she spoke.
It does, Jen.
If I thought there was any chance you'd be happy with him, I would encourage you to love him wholeheartedly, but I can't. You must do your duty, and I will see you through it no matter how bitter I may feel about it.
I shouldn't have said anything.
What you decide to do or feel is your own, and I'm sorry.
Do not be sorry, the Shalane whispered. You know as well as I do that Shertan doesn't love me, and you know that I could never love him. The only comfort for me is the long history of women who have, for political expediency or family station, been forced to do the same as I.
History is poor comfort.
Poor comfort is better than none. But I have also been fortunate to have people around me that do genuinely care for me.
Not for much longer, Jen thought, unless this plan works. The Shalane sighed.
But please, Jen, do not dwell on me. Tonight is your night, yours and Fenner's.
A hue and cry halted their talk. Jen drew his sword, thinking that the Uyumak were up to some mischief again, perhaps firing arrows in the dark.
Lie on the floor of the carriage and stay away from the windows, Jen ordered, though he thought it was probably unnecessary.
Previous nights of terror had taught her the lesson. Jen could see little, but several soldiers ran by in the darkness, and after a few minutes, someone lit a lantern near the tents where the soldiers' commanders slept. A great number of men were gathering around the lantern until a stern voice, Captain Tolbrook's, ordered them away. More lanterns were lit inside the caravan circle, the reflected lights dancing in the puddles as nobles, magicians, and churchmen awoke at the alarm. Several messengers from the soldiers' camp pushed their way into the circle, soldiers from the Rugarth and Ogmir seeking their respective leaders. A cry of anguish rose above the splashing wind and rain, and Jen knew the voice, as did the Shalane.
Mother! She cried. Something awful has happened. Jen, let me out. I must see her.
No, Shalane, Jen said. Get back down. There is danger about.
In the circle of lamplight, he could make out Mirel donning her cloak and leaving her tent escorted by Cadean and Ethrys. They didn't come near the carriage, choosing the direct route to the soldiers' encampment.
What is happening, Jen?
The Shalane asked.
I don't know. Something in the soldiers' camp. There are a lot of people moving around, but they seem concentrated around one tent. Your mother and Ethrys went there just a few moments ago.
The sound of heavy, splashing footsteps coming toward them put Jen on guard. Volney came out of the darkness. In the weak light of the lanterns, Jen saw the haunted look in his eyes. His cloak hood was down and rain dripped off his ample nose and plastered his black hair around his face.
My Lord Blackshear, he said breathless, he's dead. Regent Ogbith is dead, killed by an Uyumak arrow. Got him right in the throat while he slept.
Jen's heart fell, and he sought the stillness of his training, forcing emotion out of his mind so he could think.
It can't be, the Shalane said, voice pained. It just can't.
An Uyumak arrow? Jen asked as the Shalane sobbed. Yes, my lord. A black one. Just like the ones that killed the two soldiers. Quite a shot in the rain and dark, don't you think?
Almost impossible. Unless an Uyumak got close to the camp without the outlying patrols seeing it. The regent's tent is close to the wagons, and if he were inside lying down, then a shot to the throat would be an incredible feat of skill or luck. Jen wished he could analyze the scene himself, but knew he couldn't leave the Shalane.
Well, the evil one's about, that's for sure, Volney said, looking around nervously. I don't think it a coincidence that the leader of the caravan was killed. Ilk's work for sure.
Certainly not a coincidence, Jen said.
Go, find out as much as you can and report to me.
Yes, sir,
Volney saluted smartly and quickly walked away.
I'm sorry, Shalane, Jen consoled,
but she returned nothing. Regent Ogbith was probably as close to a father as the Shalane had known, and Jen felt for her. He felt doubly worse for Mirel, for the regent had been a long-time confidant and friend. Jen fought his impatience as people ran back and forth, word of the regent's death on their lips. Jen caught a glimpse of Maywan entering the tent and emerging some minutes later. She came directly to the Shalane's wagon in company of Ethrys,
Cadean and Mirel. Mirel's deep cowl hid her face. Ethrys seemed paler than normal, and Cadean, who had been Regent Ogbith's best friend, walked with his face to the ground and his hands clenching and unclenching as he fought back tears.
"Does she know?"
the First Mother asked. Her voice, while steady, carried a deep sense of loss.
"She does," said Jen. "I am sorry, Mirel. I wish there was something I could do. He was a good man."
Mirel embraced him and Jen returned it, wrapping her tightly in his arms. She cried quietly on his shoulder for several minutes while those around her mourned silently. At length, she pulled away and wiped her eyes.
"Let me see her. Unlock the door."
Jen reached into his cloak and pulled the heavy key from around his neck, inserting it in the lock only those with the Imtith could see. He helped Mirel in and closed the door quickly, locking it. Ethrys stood in front of him, eyes alight with fury.
"We need to talk, Jen, soon."
Jen nodded, and Ethrys left, taking long strides toward his tent. Cadean sat on the edge of the carriage and buried his face in his hands. Jen turned his gaze to Maywan, who regarded him intently.
"They said it was an Uyumark arrow to the throat," Jen said in Elvish. "Quite a shot, I would say, in the rain, dark and wind."
"It was an Uyumark arrow, but if it was shot by an Uyumark, then I'm no ranger. There was no hole in the tent where it entered, and the arrow struck down into his neck at an angle that would suggest it came from directly above him."
"Did someone stab him with it, hoping to make us think it was shot?"
"I would say that was likely, but it went deep enough into the ground behind his head that the force of a bow at close range is indicated. It is an impossible shot. Unfortunately, the Gorking soldiers turned the ground around the tent into a quagmire before I could see it, though I doubt there was much to see. I fear magic is involved, in which case I am less help than Shatan in a sword fight. A powerful enemy is set against us. If they can kill us in our camp at will without being seen, then we ought to take the Shalane and leave, Jen. Our only hope is stealth and speed. If the enemy doesn't know where we are, he can't attack us, even if magic is on his side."
Jen shook his head.
"You know I just can't take the Shalane and run off, Maywan. Which brings up a point. Who is in command now?"
"You know as well as I that it is Shadan Cairn."
"He's half mad," Jen exclaimed. "He is also a military genius. You may not like him, but if you insist on keeping the Shalane in this doomed caravan, then he is the best chance for its survival."
Jen hated the Shadan, but couldn't fault the logic.
"I suppose you're right."
An order was passed for the lanterns to be extinguished, and Maywan's face was lost in the night.
"Oh yes," she said, voice tainted with sarcasm. "Congratulations on your wedding. Fenner couldn't wait to tell me, of course. I know what you two, or maybe just you, are up to. Be careful. I think you may be making things worse."
For a minute, Jen thought she might say more, but she left, footsteps so light he could barely hear her. Jen turned his attention to Cadean, who had leaned back, staring into the darkness.
"I will find who did this," he said, voice dead. "And I will kill him."
Jen resheathed his sword and put his hand on Cadean's shoulder.
"And I will help you."